Hello and welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. Today, we're talking about how to grow a successful news channel on YouTube. This year's Reuters Institute Digital News Report showed that in the UK, the use of YouTube for news is up 3 percentage points from last year, which may not sound much, but it makes it the fastest growing platform for news. That also places it as the third most used platform for news ahead of Instagram, WhatsApp, and TikTok. YouTube is also a place where you can expect to see almost any type of video content you want, and it's also very easy to fall down the rabbit hole and keep watching more and more. So, how does news thrive in such a busy environment? We'll be looking at Times Radio, which has just hit 1 million subscribers on YouTube. Now, that's a number that sounds more flattering than it actually is, according to head of video, Brian Whelan. He tells us today about the metrics that really matter, how to achieve it, and more importantly, how to monetize it. Here's a hint. Scattergun strategies don't work. Go for depth, not scale. Want to hear more? Stay tuned. Brian, welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast. A pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk a lot today about YouTube, which is a very interesting platform for news consumption. It's also a platform I probably spend a little bit too much time on in my own spare time, as we probably all do. So the headline figure of this week is Times Radio has hit the 1 million subscribers on YouTube. So kudos on that. Take us back to where the YouTube strategy kind of came from, Brian, if you would.
So thanks for noting the 1 million subscribers. And I'll start by saying that that's a metric I hope to sort of pour scoring on as I explain my approach to YouTube, because it's not subscribers, I think, are often the least important metric. I started in Times Radio in January 2022, with a sort of very good understanding that if I could get my hands on the output of a long-form video product that's just analysis and opinion, that is the direction of travel of YouTube, and that's something that you can actually go really, really far with. There's definitely a moment of realization I had that people talking in depth about a story can do as many and more views than people actually going to the place and reporting on the story. And both are really important, but one is cheap, you can do it at scale, you can build quite a good revenue model around it, and you can build a publishing model where you get people to watch 4 or 5 20-minute videos back-to-back on your channel. Mm-hmm. I think Times Radio was sort of perfectly suited for that. It is a radio station, and it's owned by a newspaper that's hundreds of years old.
Lots of interesting stuff there. So, I mean, as I understand it, YouTube's kind of been there from the start with Times Radio for the last 4 years, but it's really in the last 2.5 years it's become a concentrated, dedicated strategy. I know you said there about, you know, the 1 million subscribers, pouring a bit of score on that. Maybe to unpack that slightly, what purpose does the YouTube strategy really serve in terms of the wider strategy for Times Radio?
There's a sort of multi-pronged approach here. The metrics I look at every day, the metrics I obsess over, watch time, audience location. How long are people watching for, and are they the right people watching? How much of our audience is in the UK? How much of our audience is in the US, Ireland, Australia, in these sort of like high revenue areas? And how long are they watching for, so we can sort of make a good amount of like revenue to cover the costs of the team, to make enough revenue to do the things that we want to do journalistically. And YouTube is a really, really good source of that. It's one really good source of that. So we watch time, and we don't really pay attention to subscribers. Subscribers come anyway, but 90% of our content at any point is watched by people who aren't subscribed to Times Radio. Our purpose is twofold. It's to make people aware of Times Radio, make people aware of the brilliant comment and analysis, the journalism, the formats that we have, but it's also to generate revenue while we're doing that. So we're publishing long-form content that comes through the radio studio every day. We also have original content that we create just for YouTube. An example for that is Frontline, which is a show just about the war in Ukraine that generates on some months maybe as much as like 30% of our views, maybe even 40% of our views. because with the Times we're able to go to very, very senior military figures, and they will speak at length, 30 minutes to an hour, about Putin, war in Ukraine, North Korean troops on the ground, these sorts of things. And people love it. You know, they watch on average maybe like 15, 20 minutes. A returning viewer might on average watch like 4 or 5 videos.
Okay, so who is your audience on YouTube then? What do you know about them?
Our audience on YouTube are sort of like high earning, skews male. They're for the most part in the UK, in the US, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand. We've got quite a lot of Germans as well, presumably English-speaking Germans who have quite a lot of anxiety maybe around the war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
We specifically focus on those people because, one, they're the sort of people who might actually be converted into Times Radio listeners, Times subscribers, but also, you know, we're a money-making operation, and that's where you get the highest CPMs. That's where we can make the most money. So, like, you know, having a video that goes viral in Latin America is not useful for us as a marketing funnel. It's not useful for us in revenue generation. And so we really, really specifically focus with a depth of connection with people in English language speaking countries.
Right. And obviously the more you can get them to watch the videos, the longer watch time, the more you're able to monetize those videos, right? I mean, how effective is the monetization strategy here?
Sometimes it's very, very effective. I think I'd never publish a video shorter than 8 minutes. I'm not in the game of like, you know, here's a short hit on this. We're not in the sort of business of like aiming for sort of virality. What we will offer is a big story breaks.
Yeah.
We'll take a little bit of time and we'll give you an expert unpacking it, or we'll give you someone with a good, well-considered opinion, but we'll give it to you for 8 minutes.
A lot of people though, Brian, complain about YouTube demonetizing videos. Have you run into that at all?
Never, no. We've quite a good relationship with YouTube across News UK, and obviously like we've got great sort of like sister brands like Piers Morgan Uncensored, TalkSport,
yeah,
The Times, The Sun, etc. We've got a really close relationship with YouTube, and we can monetize news and politics. We can monetize like good opinion, and it's a really, really good relationship for us.
Yeah, and can you tell me how much sort of revenue you're able to generate through YouTube a month, maybe?
I'm not sure if I can. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to. I think, you know, YouTube, if done properly by a publisher, and it's done wrong by lots of publishers who sort of just do spray and pray or just put like aim for like short viral things, is a serious multi-million pound, you know, string to your bow. It's something additionally you can do.
Okay, well, I appreciate you can't talk about it in specific numbers, but does it cover some of the costs of producing the content or all of it? Or, you know, how much is it able to cover your costs as an operation?
It's a profitable endeavor to run YouTube channels properly, but it also depends on how you cut it within the company. Saying, well, it doesn't pay for all of Times Radio, but it does pay for all of the video team. You know, it depends what way, you know, and Times Radio is a commercial radio station as well, and it you know, there's ads that run on that, and there are brand deals then that cross over into video where people also want to have, and there are podcasts that go out on air that also get sold. So
yeah,
it's part of a sort of family of ways to make money, and I think it's certainly worth taking seriously as a publisher.
I don't know if it maybe precedes this either, but at what point were you able to monetize videos since launching on YouTube?
I think maybe within 20 days of me joining the company, we got there. Like, we recently launched a sister channel, Times Radio Politics, which fairly self-explanatory what it is. If the main channel has become very heavily focused on the global situation, the sort of like conflicts breaking out everywhere, Trump election, situation in Ukraine, NATO. And so we've spun out all of our politics content in Westminster into a new channel. I think that took us the guts of a week to get that to the point of being monetized. So I think that's something like a minimum amount of subscribers and a minimum amount of watch hours. But, you know, we have that sort of brand authority. People are used to watching our videos. So we launched that,
yeah,
gave it a push, and within a week, you know, it's able to,
yeah,
cover some of the costs of running it.
To monetize on YouTube, you first need to hit 1,000 subscribers. Second, you need to hit 4,000 hours of watch time within a 12-month period, or 10 million views on YouTube Shorts within a 90-day period. But, as we'll talk about coming up, Shorts, YouTube's answer to vertical short-form videos, they've not proved particularly useful to Times Radio. Reason being is that while they can generate large views, they're generally outside of those key markets we spoke about earlier on, the US, the UK, Ireland, and Australia, which can earn more revenue for ad impressions and are more likely to convert people into radio listeners and subscribers to the Times itself. Times Radio is a team of 8, including Brian, looking after the two YouTube accounts Times Radio and the new Times Radio Politics channel, as well as the other usual suspects like TikTok, Facebook, and Twitter. The team cherry-picks the best part of the radio show and clips them up for social. These are typically punchy, well-informed, strong, qualified opinions and analysis, at least 8 minutes long. This serves as a best for the Times Radio for people wanting to catch up, but also a way to capture new audiences.
In August, if we take those numbers, like, you know, 46 million people watch videos on the Times Radio YouTube channel. That's not where our radar figures are at. You know, we're a growing little digital radio station, but so there are more people who watch videos on our YouTube channel than listen to Times Radio. And I think by having that YouTube channel and making people more aware of the talent that we have on air, the sort of variety of guests that we have, the things that we cover, the seriousness of our journalism, I think is really, really useful for Times Radio.
Yeah. Is that why you pitched for the YouTube sort of strategy 2.5 years ago?
I think having a studio with cameras in it and having some of the best journalists in the industry walk in and out of that studio nonstop all day, it makes it very easy. It's like cheating. It makes it very, very easy to run a YouTube channel where you can do big numbers, keep things ticking over, and then...
Yeah, I think you said like 30% of your content was sort of original created for YouTube. So 70% is existing assets, talking heads that you can sort of lift quite easily for quite high yield then.
Yeah, I mean, we're downstream of the radio station. Like, there's quite serious conversations where we say, this story is taking off. We need 4 more of these. We're constantly aiming to push up the amount of time people spend watching things, push up the completion rates. And so, you know, we don't want to be in the short form video game. And I know sort of YouTube is quite keen on their shorts product.
They are.
it's something that we avoided for quite a while because we found that the success of YouTube shorts did nothing for us monetarily and did nothing for us as a pipeline. And in fact, was ending, you know, it was giving us additional subscribers in areas that we didn't care about. So, you know, we could add 10,000 subscribers in Azerbaijan, but that doesn't matter to us because they're not going to sit down and watch, you know, PMQs. It's not relevant. It harms our reach long term. So, like, you know, that, to that extent, sometimes subscribers is a vanity metric, because I'd always say, like, well, tell me who your subscribers are, and, you know, can you get them all to show up to a live event? Or if you go live, how many people are actually watching? Or how many of them actually have engaged with your brand or understand, or how many videos do they watch?
Enjoying the show so far? I hope so. Why don't you continue the conversation with us at our digital journalism conference, News Rewired, on the 27th of November in London. We've got a panel discussion on exactly this topic, how news publishers can make the most of social video platforms like YouTube and TikTok. You'll hear directly from The Telegraph, The News Movement, and other great names to come. For an extra day of exclusive access and training, you can join our first ever study tour on the 26th of November, a day beforehand, where you will visit the newsrooms of the Financial Times, Fortune and Metro. We've got a great deal on as well. Book tickets for the study tour and the conference and save yourself £50. All those details can be found on newsrewired.com. We'll see you there. I mean, we were talking there about 8 minutes and up. I don't know if there's a particular ceiling where you think maybe that's too long, but do you find there to be a sweet spot in between those numbers where you tend to get the highest sort of completion rate with the videos?
It sort of varies topic to topic. I'll tell you about 2 of my favourite videos in our back end, if that's okay. It might help explain it. It was on the 1 year anniversary of the invasion of Ukraine, and it was multiple former NATO generals in our office being interviewed, and they're just one down the line. So maybe let's say it was maybe 5 military experts, NATO experts, all in one space for 70 minutes. And the completion rate on that is something like 35, 40 minutes. I love that video because I love the idea of a million people watching a video for 35 minutes, you know, that's made by a digital radio station that belongs to a really, really, really old newspaper. And it sort of displaces traditional broadcasters, which is interesting. There's a very interesting interview that was done by Jane and Fee, which is about a woman who found out that her parents were siblings. And on Christmas Day and Boxing Day 2 years ago, a million people watched that video each day. It was half an hour long, and the average view duration for that video was 20 minutes. And I think those videos were exactly the right length for where they need to be. But if we're doing a video today about the Chris Carver story, day three, just to aid your podcast by saying what day it's been recorded.
Thank you so much. Helps.
If we're doing a story today and we say, oh yeah, 70 minutes is the optimum length because of that NATO video, or we think 30 minutes is the optimum length because of that amazing Jane and Fee interview, then we're taking completely the wrong lessons from our own data.
Right.
And it's like the right length for a video really is how long can this person sustain an interesting story or an interesting argument, an interesting line of opinion. And, it's something that you can get wrong quite a lot, but it's something that you really have to watch. And like retention rates, if a lot of people click on our videos, but they only make it a quarter of the way through, YouTube stops showing it to people very, very quickly.
Right, so that's why it matters.
Yeah.
In terms of future recommendations. I mean, that's the powerful thing about YouTube, isn't it? I mean, as I said, I spend too long on YouTube, but the one thing you notice when you use it a lot is that it's a very powerful recommendation system. I mean, I'm playing a video game at the moment. I went on YouTube the other day to look at how do I beat this level. You close it down, you finish, and then when you come back on, there's like two or three videos that's recommended on the same video game. I mean, the whole draw of YouTube is this recommendation system, and you're saying that once you perfect like the retention rate and the completion rate, that really does translate into the sort of recommendations in the algorithm.
Yeah, and you know, people talk about a sort of YouTube algorithm, and I always joke at work that if you use the word algorithm in a meeting about YouTube, you know, you should pay a fine. Because what it is, that you're 100% correct on, is an extremely powerful recommendations engine. Yeah. It's an extremely powerful recommendations engine that serves ads, and that's what it does. And it's our job to create really compelling content and to sell it in an honest way. So this video is about this thing, no more, no less. If you want that, click it. If you don't click it. Maybe around 7% of people offered that video will click through to it. If when they click through, they watch for a certain duration and they complete a certain percentage of the video, the recommendation engine knows this video is being sold honestly and people seem to enjoy it. So I will serve it up to a higher bracket of people, and that goes again and again and again. So, you know, a great way to tank your YouTube channel would be to oversell your videos and just like make them seem more exciting than they are. Like Times Radio at times is very, very, very straight. If you want two military experts talking about 5 kilometers of land near the Donbass for 45 minutes, yeah, click our videos. But if you don't, you know, and most people don't, that's great. But we want YouTube to sort that, because we know every day there's 2-3 million people who will watch that content, and we only want to reach those. So we have to be totally clear. This is pretty heavy going war stuff.
Times Radio is a relatively new part of a wider and legacy portfolio of News UK owned media brands that have developed large YouTube channels. There's TalkSport, a fellow digital radio broadcaster with nearly 1.6 million subscribers. The Times and Sunday Times, interestingly with fewer subscribers at 817,000. And The Sun, which is not too far from the 6 million subscribers mark. Of course, there's TalkTV, purpose-built for social video, sitting at 1.1 million subscribers, eclipsed by the Piers Morgan Uncensored show, which has its own channel with 3.4 million subscribers. Remember, a key lesson so far is that subscribers are a vanity metric and don't tell the full story. Sure, subscribers can be gained with a broad brush approach. Harder, but more worthwhile, is trying to develop a specific audience with deeper levels of watch time and completion rates.
I think one thing about TalkSport that I'm really jealous of is on a Monday morning when they start live streaming at 9 a.m. on YouTube, they have 10,000 people waiting to watch. Mm. And I'm not a football fan, so I find it difficult to understand how they're doing that. But I study their data, I look at what they do, and I think I would love to have 10,000 people waiting on YouTube on a Monday morning to sort of like watch Stig and Asma deliver the sort of week's news. And I know that people aren't as crazy about news and current affairs as they are about football, but I think there's definitely interesting lessons about how sort of loyal an audience they've cultivated there as well.
Yeah. Is it just a case of demand? Like, people just aren't interested in tuning in live? They know that they can catch up later? Or what do you put that down to?
I think there's a balance that we have to strike. There's so many stakeholders at play here. There's a balance we have to strike that, like, I don't want Times Radio's video offering to be a, like, substitutional good. Mm-hmm. In the same way that Times Radio shouldn't be a substitutional good for the Times. But they should be, like, complementary. It's like, if you like Times Radio, you should get a Times subscription. If you have a Times subscription, you should listen to Times Radio. If you like Times Radio's output on YouTube, you should listen to Times Radio. You should go back to the Times and read their journalism. And it's a very delicate balance to make sure that, you know, if I just start streaming Andrew Neil's show every day at 1 o'clock on YouTube, I can build a big audience around that. But also, how many of those people are then not listening on connected devices? Are we just cannibalizing a set amount of people? So there's a fine balance there.
Well, how come they can do it then?
Like, yeah. TalkSport is its own beast. It's this brand that's sort of like rapidly growing. And I guess they've made a decision that additional 10,000 people on YouTube is good. I don't think, you know, they have such a huge amount of listeners as well. I don't think cannibalization is something they need to worry about. You know, we launched during the pandemic. We're still growing our listeners. You know, it's something that we need to be more delicate about.
Is there anything that you're encouraged strategically to do at News UK that works across the whole, you know, portfolio of YouTube channels?
It's a bit of a free-for-all. Everyone takes their own approach, you know, and I think there's maybe like there's an orthodoxy around how YouTube works, which we've sort of established over the last year. And there's like,
yeah. And that orthodoxy, just for clarification, is what?
Get the right audience in the right location, get them to watch for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Stick in as many ads as you can, repeat.
But then what makes yours strategy at Times Radio distinct and different to the other channels in that portfolio?
I love the other channels. But you know, internally we're competitive. Our focus is on depth. Our focus is really, really on depth. I want to have, you know, having 1 million subscribers is great, but I want to have people who watch 6 hours a week of Times Radio videos. I want to have a good connection to them. It's not an everything channel. It's not publish a video every 15 minutes. You know, if we only publish 4 or 5 videos in a day, but they connect well with the audience, that's good. I'd rather do more, but it's about depth, and we're trying to build that sort of that depth, which is why 1 million subscribers is a great number to sort of like bang a drum about, but it's far more about how deep we can drive them, what we can get them to do, what user actions they'll take.
So you don't care that you've got more subscribers than the Times and Sunday Times then? No bragging rights for that, no?
I would never. You know, they're our friends. They're a great team. They're operating on a sort of a different video strategy to us. We've got this studio that just pumps stuff out for us. We've got cameras and kit, and we pump out our own stuff all day. And then, you know, they have a totally different strategy they're working to. We all get along. We collaborate. It's all friendly.
Good stuff. I think the one thing you've really improved over the last couple of years are thumbnails on YouTube. I think when I look back to the first videos, you know, it's a screen grab and a logo. I think what you see working on YouTube a lot now is really front loading heavy text to click people in. And I see that a lot more in your current thumbnails. I just wonder if that's something you've put a lot of time and effort and thinking into.
It's thumbnails are interesting because, you know, I trained in local media as a newspaper reporter, and then I was a different type of newspaper reporter, and then I was a TV producer. And like at no point, I don't think I ever actually studied graphic design in a meaningful way. But in my current job, I have to understand data, sort of plan content, be an expert on thumbnails, be an expert on headlines, be a graphic designer and constantly come up with new graphics, thumbnails, edit video, shoot video, blah, 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 all the way through. And you sort of need to be like in the higher percentage of people doing the thing in the country at each task, which is kind of a bit hectic. So thumbnails, it's really, really basic. Big words, big face, a clear emotion.
Yeah.
What is the reason that a person would click on this? So you've got maybe two big words on it that says like, you know, Putin sunk.
It's never much. It's three words tops, isn't it? Three, four words, something like that.
Yeah. And so like you know what the story is going to be. You want to convey the story. You want a face. People make a connection with a face. You want that face to ideally be making an emotion, and you want just like visual clarity in it. So it's a constant process of like refinement for us. And we might put up a video and maybe it does 2,000 views in the first hour, and we'll know that it's tanking. So we'll just put a new thumbnail on it, new headline on it, but true to the content. You can't missell things. True to the content. And we've seen that go like take an uptick, and then maybe it'll do 20,000 views in the next hour. And by the end of, you know, by the end of 24 hours, it'll be on maybe 300,000 views. You can completely turn things around with a good thumbnail, and you can completely tank good content with a bad thumbnail.
Wow. How many views equals success for you on a video within the first 24 hours?
If I see anything with less than five figures on the YouTube channel, it makes me quite sad. I think our judgment should be good enough from publishing so many videos that we should never do that. The only time we should really do that is if we want to see if the audience has an appetite for a totally new thing, something completely new is happening, and we try it out and we might find out, okay, well, that doesn't work. And maybe you'd even try it a second time just to make sure. And then by the second time, you have a pretty good data set and you say, okay, this doesn't work. We're not doing it anymore. My rolling sort of 48 hours is I want to do 4 million views every 48 hours.
Across all videos, you mean?
Across the main YouTube channel.
Yeah, collectively.
And I think if in an hour period we're on less than 50,000 views in total per hour on YouTube, I get anxious. I think, you know, sometimes it'll be on rolling at 100,000 views. That's great. It's a happy day. I can relax. But when it's below 50,000 views per hour, I start sort of looking around and think, okay, what's coming in the pipeline from radio, or who can we speak to, or what can we create to get this back to a sort of comfortable rolling sort of minimum views?
What's the frequency of your output, generally speaking, you know, day to day?
I guess in terms of scheduling, like from 7 a.m. I want to start publishing videos either every hour or every 90 minutes, depending on what's happening. And then if something very unexpected happens, the leader of Hezbollah is killed, we might go to 30 minute slots. But, you know, I want them to be successful videos. So I'm happy for the team to skip a slot if they just genuinely feel that there's nothing that will hit the audience. There's, you know, a bad video will harm your reach. A good video will increase your reach. And so I'm happy for them to skip that.
That's really interesting. So you don't feel a pressure to just put things out for the sake of it. You're very much in the mindset of it needs to be good to go out, otherwise it will harm us longer term.
No, it breaks my heart to see things just go up just for the sake of it, just to publish things. And there are publishers who do that, and maybe there's publishers in News UK who do that. But if I look at, say, like GB News's YouTube account, you know, it gives me anxiety. They're publishing a video every 2 or 3 minutes. And I just think, well, it almost suggests to me when I see different accounts do that, that maybe you don't know what does well. And it's like, just hold back the things that will do badly. Only do the things that will do well. You know, build the success.
Yeah, so I'm not really sensing any real hard quota here. It's a case of, look, we want every video to be hitting those five figures at least. And if not, then we're going to have a hard look at why that was and what we can learn from that.
Yeah, because what you're building is depth, not scale. And, you know, if you just publish whenever, all the time, just pump stuff out, it suggests that you're not trying to feed a specific audience or cultivate a specific audience.
Right. I think this has been a really refreshing take just on the whole vanity metrics conversation. Like, it's easy to get caught up in the millions of subscribers, but really, what does that really mean at the end of the day for your audience? Who's watching you? How far are they actually engaging with your content? What does that translate into? And I think that's been a real takeaway so far. I guess one of my final questions to you is that if you could go back 2.5 years to when you started this strategy, what would be one thing you would do the same, and what would be one thing that you would do differently?
The thing that I would do the same almost from the very beginning would be go deep on Ukraine, quickly go deep on Ukraine, go long on Ukraine, and cultivate that Ukraine audience. And I don't really regret sort of like getting us into that sort of, getting us so large in that space, even if it's not necessarily, if you turn on Times Radio now, you might not hear Times Radio talking about Ukraine. If you follow us on YouTube, you might think it's all we talk about. I don't really regret that. I think it's really, really useful. And if anything, I would have gone longer on our Ukraine output, you know, earlier. You know, I think it's within the first year that we start producing 70-minute long, multiple general original shows on YouTube. And I just think, God, we should have done it from day one. We should have said, this conflict is extremely serious. We're one of the best positioned brands to analyze what's happening. Let's go really, really deep. So I think we've gone through lots of cringy periods of like bad thumbnails. We've gone through periods of sort of like the experimentation with shorts when they first launched, I think was bad and damaging. It gave us a couple of bad months. But like, there's nothing too terrible. We haven't done a disaster. I've done one or two YouTube disasters on other accounts that I've built in other broadcasters, but broadly it's been a pretty safe operation. I think I learned my worst YouTube lessons elsewhere, and then I was able to sort of be quite safe and good.
I think the first point is really interesting, because I think if you're running a YouTube channel, you probably overthink if you're overproducing something. If you think about how the audience is actually going to be consuming your content, they're probably not going to be going straight to your account and going through all your videos and realizing you've done 20 videos on Putin. They're going to be from the homepage clicking a video that entices them and then getting more and more and more. So I think, yeah, not regretting how much, whether you've been, you know, in the moment doing a topic like Ukraine makes a lot of sense.
To support your great insight there, if you were a legacy publisher, and if you're an old school journalist, you'll go to YouTube and you'll look at our YouTube channel, and you'll look at it in that sort of youtube.com/timesradio, and you'll go, oh my God, there's like 50 videos about the Russia-Ukraine war published this week. And then, you know, it's almost as many videos as all of the rest of the things we've published. No one else looks at it that way. You know, what I want is, you know, someone sat in a sort of like back bedroom in Kent to be saying, that is the best analysis of the current situation of the war in Ukraine that I've seen all week. And then they watch three more. And that's actually the way people consume the content. And then they might also then watch a bit of Hugo Rifkind or a bit of Tim Shipman or Lyra Spirit, because we've built that level of brand trust with them where they're like, these guys know what they're talking about. And they're sort of like repeatedly hitting the point back to back.
100%. Yeah, that's hit the nail on the head there, Brian, to be honest with you. Like I said, I think as editors, only we see how much we're producing on the topic when it comes to YouTube. They're just down the rabbit hole until their user journey ends, really. And so it makes sense to feed that demand where it's happening. So, Brian, I think that's a wonderful takeaway from today. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and this has been a great chat. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you.
The takeaway for today is this: depth, not scale, which is surprising because when you think of YouTube, you can often think about clickbait videos. However, YouTube is a powerful recommendation tool, so lean into those hot topics for as long as you can and own your biggest wins. Don't overlook the details. A video can live, die, or be revived by its thumbnail, for instance. Focus on building deep watch times. This engagement equals greater prominence and more recommendations, and that equals more ad revenue. You can most likely make use of your existing assets to start with too, if you're a digital newsroom with any sort of multimedia offering. But what did you learn from today? I'd love to know and continue the conversation. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter/x@JPGJournalism, or email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all of your usual podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.